The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Congress finally looks more like America, not just full of rich old waspy men. And although it's true, we've still got work to do, we get to get out the pom-poms every now and then. Sure, it's mostly in the House of Representatives. The Senate's still outdated, sad to say. But at least we're cheering for a Congress that is more Native American, Black, Latina, Muslim, lesbian, and gay. Like Sylvia Garcia and Veronica Escobar, the first Latinas from the Lone Star State, plus Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, two Muslim congresswomen who are both so great. Sharice Davids and Deb Haaland are Native American. The fact that they're the first is kinda nuts. And Angie Craig, the first lesbian mom, ousted a man who complained he couldn't still call women sluts. Karma! Congress finally looks more like America, not just full of rich old waspy men. And although it's true, we've still got work to do, we get to get out the pom-poms every now and then. Sure, it's mostly in the House of Representatives. The Senate's still outdated, sad to say. But at least we're cheering for a Congress that is more Native American, Black, Latina, Muslim, lesbian, and gay. And female, we've got more women, people of color, LGBTQ, which makes those old white guys a little bitter. Plus youngsters like Alexandria or Ocasio-Cortez, who is especially good at throwing shade on Twitter. Lots of scummy racist jerks were finally voted out, and every day we get some more good news. Of course, there are a ton of issues left to fight about, and we weren't able to get rid of Ted Cruz. Oh well, Congress finally looks more like America, not just full of rich old waspy men. And although it's true, we've still got work to do, we get to get out the pom-poms every now and then. Sure, it's mostly in the House of Representatives. The Senate's still outdated, sad to say. But at least we're cheering for a Congress that is more Native American, Black, Latina, immigrant, working class, and new to politics, young, female, Jewish, Muslim, lesbian, and gay.
Yay! That's Lauren Mayer getting us started on this Friday. I hear the echo was back. I thought I fixed it all yesterday. I guess I'll have to play around with it again this weekend because we don't need no stinking echo on our videos. Anyway, Lauren Mayer, who does great comedy songs, you can find her on Twitter and on YouTube at Lauren Mayer Comedy Songs. Well, we made it to a Friday, and what a week it has been. We've got a busy, busy show for you today. Our pal Driftglass will be along to wax philosophically, talk about a little bit about everything. And I figured since we're just so close to the weekend, we may as well celebrate with some weed. Actually, we're not going to do that here, but we're going to talk with someone from the Marijuana Policy Project and find out how cannabis fared in the elections, because the Democrats had a good election. I think pot did too. So we'll do all of that today. So I'll tell you what, let's just get right to, well, we'll get to what's news in a second. Let me tell you a couple of other stories that happened since the news broke today. The judge in the CNN lawsuit against the White House over Jim Acosta's press pass, the judge delayed issuing a ruling twice in that lawsuit. But Judge Timothy J. Kelly, a Trump appointee, ordered the White House to reinstate Jim Acosta's press pass immediately. Here's how they broke the news on CNN.
Decided with CNN saying the White House was wrong to revoke our colleague Jim Acosta's press pass, federal judge Timothy Kelly ordering the White House to reinstate his press pass, this initial victory, because they had sought immediate relief, emergency relief to this. So a victory in this case, you could say broader, more than for CNN, for press freedom.
Again, this is about all press access to the White House, whether the administration or any administration likes questions asked or the tone they're asked in or not. This is about the First Amendment and the Fifth Amendment.
So it is about all those things. Jim Acosta went up to the microphones after the ruling.
I just want to say something very briefly, and that is I want to thank all of my colleagues in the press who supported us this week. And I want to thank the judge for the decision he made today. And let's go back to work.
Okay, so he's back at work today in the White House. Of course, there was no White House press briefing today. Sarah Sanders did issue a statement in response that reads, quote, "Today, the court made clear that there..." I was trying to do a... I don't do a good Sarah Sanders. I won't even try. "The court made clear that there is no absolute First Amendment right to access the White House?" No. Let me just finish her statement. She continued, "In response to the court, we will temporarily reinstate the reporter's hard pass. We will also further develop rules and processes to ensure fair and orderly press conferences in the future. There must be decorum at the White House." Damn it. "The echo is now on audio as well as video?" That's impossible. It's really impossible. So I'm asking everybody else who's listening, do you hear an echo now? Because if there's an echo now, I'm really in trouble because there's nothing that should be echoing right now. At least it's Friday. Anyway, Sanders is wrong. In fact, Judge Timothy Kelly emphasized that this was a limited ruling on the basis of due process implications. And she said, "I have not determined that the First Amendment was violated here or what legal standards would apply," avoiding the question altogether. Okay, so now I hear the echo is only not on my voice, but it's on when I play a recording. Like, okay, so this is Trump, responding to the news that Acosta is getting his press pass back.
"Writing up rules and regulations to make our position. I think you were treated very unfairly, both of you. I think you were treated very unfairly because you have somebody interrupting you. And they don't listen to the rules and regulations, we'll end up back in court and we'll win. But more importantly, we'll just leave. And then you won't be very happy."
"Mr. President."
"Because we do get good ratings."
"Mr. President, when you talk about rules and regulations, what do you mean, sir?"
Decorum. You can't take three questions and four questions and just stand up and not sit down. Decorum. You have to practice decorum. You were there, you understood, and you understand. We want total freedom of the press. It's very important to me. It's more important to me than anybody would believe. But you..."
Okay, that's enough of him because he's full of shit. All right, we're going to go to what's news, and then we'll come back. We'll speak with Mason Tavert of Marijuana Policy Project. Okay, there's no echo on the live feed from my website, I'm hearing. If there's an echo today, I really apologize. I know that there was an echo on videos that I played, but there shouldn't be anything on the audio. And we're going to do the recorded what's news today, so I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that there's no echo here. We'll take a break. We'll do what's news and come back. It's Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Justice Department has prepared charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, prosecutors inadvertently revealed in a court filing. The Wall Street Journal reported the DOJ aims to get Assange, who's been holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London since 2012, into a U.S. courtroom. Frank Figluzzi, former assistant director for counterintelligence at the FBI, explained the significance of the news.
"I think the strategy strategy for Mueller is to tell us the story of a corrupt president through the indictments of others. And if indeed Mueller has anything to do, and we don't know that yet, through this breaking news, that if he has anything to do with the indictment of Julian Assange, then we may well see the story told through that indictment. Understand that our intelligence community has WikiLeaks covered like a blanket, as if they are a foreign adversary. So when Trump sees questions he doesn't like to answer, he might be realizing that Mueller has so much more on the classified side than anyone ever realized. And maybe, just maybe, that is technical coverage of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and their role with the Russians in the release of emails during the presidential campaign.
In Florida, votes are still being counted. Ari Melber was broadcasting his MSNBC show live from outside the Broward Supervisor of Elections office Thursday evening when he got some breaking news on the recount. The deadline for the machine recount was 5 p.m. This happened less than 2 hours later.
Breaking news out here in Broward County, and I mean breaking. We just got this. Broward County now admits they submitted their recount numbers 2 minutes late, and thus, under the rules, the results apparently will not count. I want to tell you exactly what that means. The entire developments, the drama, the protests, the counting, everything that's been going on behind me the last few days, according to this breaking news tonight, that would be for nothing, because the state is going to use the original vote totals while this manual recount proceeds under state law. Can't make it up.
But Broward's not alone. Rachel Maddow has more.
Palm Beach County missed the deadline because of their machines overheating. Hillsborough County decided not to submit new results at all after the power went out, and then the recount showed a drop of 846 votes from the first time through. The state instead is going to use whatever those counties submitted to the state on Saturday alongside recounted totals from all the other counties in the state. Whatever they end up counting right now, the governor's race looks more out of reach for Democrat Andrew Gillum than the Florida Senate race would for Democrat Bill Nelson. Tonight, the Republican in the governor's race, Ron DeSantis, declared victory over Andrew Gillum. He called himself the governor-elect. Andrew Gillum is not conceding tonight. He continues to say that every vote needs to be counted and there's more votes to count. In the Florida Senate race, we are going, it looks like, to a second recount. There was the machine recount that almost all the counties finished today. But Rick Scott, after that machine recount, he appears to lead Democratic incumbent Bill Nelson by less than 13,000 votes. And that is definitely close enough for there to be yet another statewide recount. This time, not a machine recount. This time, it'll be ballots being counted by hand.
The GOP has been wiped out in Orange County, California. Katie Porter, a consumer law expert and former student of Elizabeth Warren's, beat Republican Mimi Walters in California's 45th district. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg responded to a damning New York Times report that accused the company of engaging a Republican PR firm to smear liberal donor George Soros, claiming he only, quote, learned about this yesterday. Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg also weighed in, calling the Times report, quote, simply untrue. North Korean state media is reporting that Kim Jong-un observed the successful testing of a, quote, newly developed ultra-modern tactical weapon. The North Korean leader is said to have been, quote, so excited to say that another great work was done by the defense scientists and munitions industrial workers to increase the defense capability of the country. No further details were available on the weapon in question, but experts say the testing is most likely meant as a message for Washington amid stalled nuclear talks. South Korean officials have said more analysis is necessary to determine what weapon was tested. Authorities announced 7 more fatalities in Northern California's wildfire, raising the death toll of the Camp Fire to 63. Authorities also raised the number of homes destroyed by the fire to 9,700. County officials said the number of people reported missing in the wake of the blaze rose to 631, a huge increase from previous estimates. Donald Trump gave a speech from the White House on Thursday in which he spoke about providing support for veterans and military families. But at one point, Trump went on a tangent about his admiration for America's military aircraft, especially the F-35.
Just gave out a tremendous order for brand new F-35s, fighter jets. They're stealth. You can't see them. Other than that, they're easy to beat. I said to one of the pilots, I said, how good are these? They said, well, sir, the problem is you can't see them when you fight them. I said, that sounds like it's a big advantage. He said, it's an awfully big advantage.
This wouldn't be the first time Trump has spoken of F-35s as if they can't be seen with the naked eye. While F-35s are known to be undetectable by radar and other kinds of sensory equipment, they are not literally invisible, as Trump says every now and then. And that's a bit of What's News for Now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and The Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right, we are back. Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. It was a big win for Democrats. Democrats are still winning in the midterm elections. I think there are still, I don't know, I have it written down somewhere, how many votes are left to count. But let's see, there's with Mimi Walters defeating or being defeated by the Democrats, they've picked up a net gain of 34 seats. Six races remain uncalled. Democrats lead in five of those six seats. All are GOP held. The overall balance of power stands at Democrats 229, Republicans 200, undecided 6. So, yes, the midterms were very good for the Democrats. What I want to know is, how did marijuana fare? Because it was a good day for the Democrats. You'd think it was a good day for pot, right? So to find out, we're checking in with Mason Tvert of the Marijuana Policy Project, where he's, I believe, the director of communications. Mason, you with us?
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. So as I was telling the listeners, Tuesday was a good day for Democrats around the country. How did cannabis do in various contests?
This year's election was another milestone for the movement to roll back prohibition and replace it with a different approach. And we saw that in multiple states. Michigan became the 10th state in the country to make marijuana legal for adults, the 9th
wow.
that will have a system of regulating it for commercial production and sales. Utah and Missouri became the 31st and 32nd states to enact comprehensive medical marijuana legislation. And while there's still some work to be done in Utah, where lawmakers and proponents and opponents of the initiative there had arrived at a compromise ahead of the election to enact some compromise legislation. Long story short is that the state is headed toward adopting a medical marijuana program there. So very successful at the statewide level. We also saw some local victories in states like Ohio and Wisconsin, where municipal or county voters approved measures on a variety of different types of measures. Some were binding, some were non-binding. But overall, a very strong showing for marijuana-related ballot questions.
Now, in terms of on the national level, the ouster of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General has to be good for those who are fighting for an end to prohibition. Yes, Jeff Sessions was notoriously anti-cannabis.
Well, in the election, it was really a different Sessions
Pete Sessions,
being ousted.
Right?
That ended up being important. Pete Sessions of Texas, who mm-hmm. had been holding up a number of marijuana policy reforms in the House, not only lost his chairmanship with the Democratic takeover of the House, but also lost his seat entirely.
Yes, he did.
So that was certainly a gain. But then with regard to Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, I think it's really, you know, it really remains to be seen what impact, if any, that will have. You know, while he certainly had his negative viewpoints on marijuana and was by no means a friend to marijuana policy reform efforts, it's worth noting that when it comes to marijuana enforcement, he left the Department of Justice exactly as he found it, meaning that enforcement efforts did not change from the Obama administration to the Trump administration. While Sessions did rescind some Obama-era guidance on enforcement, he also said that it simply was because he didn't think it was necessary and that they were already following that protocol. So really, not a whole lot necessarily changes, and we also don't know who will be the permanent replacement there.
Right.
And regardless of who it is, whether it will make a difference, because the president has made it clear he thinks states should be able to have their own marijuana laws, and thus far, the federal government has generally been respecting that.
Well, let's hope that continues and gets better. Is there any progress on moving towards removing the Schedule I narcotic designation?
Well, it's really going to require an act of Congress when it comes to rescheduling marijuana or descheduling, which would be the preferred action, which is to remove it from the federal drug schedules entirely, mm-hmm. much like alcohol is not currently on there.
Wow.
But that will likely take a little bit more time. That would require some pretty comprehensive legislation. There are some bills out there that would do that, and they have been picking up supporters and gaining co-sponsors over the last year or two. But at this point in time, the type of legislation that we expect to advance quickest and to actually even have a chance of passing and being signed into law in the next session are really some of the more specific aspects like banking,
yeah.
And making sure businesses and states that are allowing them to operate have access to banking and financial services, and then, of course, the tax issue. Currently, marijuana-related businesses are not able to take standard business deductions, much like other legal businesses, and getting that issue addressed, I think, will also be a pretty big priority. These are things that, you know, there's way more support for than broader reform,
mm-hmm.
and they also don't require members of Congress to necessarily be supportive of legalization or comprehensive reform. You know, there are a lot of members who may not be comfortable voting to make marijuana legal or say that states should be able to make it legal, but they will vote for legislation that says in states where it's legal, marijuana businesses should be able to access banking services.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in Florida, and we voted in medical marijuana a couple of years ago, and dispensaries are starting to show up in a few places. They're slowly but surely they're getting there. My husband has a medical marijuana card, and I know that when he goes to the dispensary, it's all cash. And that's got, I mean, that's got to be dangerous to do business that way.
Yeah, it certainly presents some public safety issues. You don't necessarily want to see this, you know, people having to walk around with this much cash.
Right.
I will say that, you know, there are businesses that do operate like this. Of course, we see a lot of cash being dealt with when it comes to things like casinos.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain restaurants or food places, chains, and so on that will only use cash. But we're talking about an entire industry here. And, you know, we're not just talking about how customers make purchases, but also how these businesses make their payments to employees and to vendors.
Wow. Oh,
and
that's right.
For taxes. I
sure.
mean, for them to actually make their payments to the state and federal government, issues arise when they're trying to make those in large cash payments.
Wow. You know, I hadn't even thought of that, paying their employees and paying taxes. I know Florida is, you know, should make a lot of money. This is, after all, the Sunshine State. The stuff grows like weeds. And Florida's always behind the times anyway. So Mason Tvert is with us from the Marijuana Policy Project. They're at MPP.org. Did you say 10 states now have legalized marijuana for recreational use?
That's correct. Michigan
wow.
became the 10th state, and that's in addition to Washington, D.C., and the U.S. territory of the Northern Mariana Islands, which recently adopted some legislation to that effect.
Okay. I know that weed just became legal in Canada, and did I also read that Mexico was legalizing it?
It appears to be headed in that direction. What happened is the Supreme Court in Mexico has essentially ruled that marijuana prohibition in its current state in Mexico is unconstitutional and has essentially directed the government to address it. And so at this point, it seems quite likely that this will occur. We've already seen legislation introduced by a key lawmaker in in Mexico, and we've seen some positive comments from the incoming administration there about this issue. So it really does seem quite likely that our southern neighbors are also going to be moving in this direction in addition to those up north.
Wow. Was this a long time coming in Canada? Because I guess I don't hear a lot of Canadian news down here in Florida, but this took me by surprise. It seemed like it was out of the blue.
It's been in the works for the last really couple of years, I suppose you could say. Justin Trudeau had really made it a big part of his campaign. Mm. He had pledged, if he were to be elected and the Liberal government were to be elected, that he would make it a priority to quickly move to end prohibition and establish a regulatory regime that would really treat marijuana a little more like alcohol. And that's what we saw, is once he took office, they began moving in this direction. The parliament began considering legislation. As always, that process certainly took a lot of debate and compromise, but they did ultimately pass legislation and set a date in the future, which recently came and went. And as of now, we now see a number of provinces where marijuana is being regulated, some still working on their rules and getting these things going. Some are not going to allow sales and simply allow possession, but this is really the type of system we would expect to see. It's the same with how we really see alcohol being treated, where it's essentially legal at the federal level, but the details are largely left to the local governments or state or provincial governments, and that's what is happening there.
Right. Now, with that, I mean, you don't know what the rules are from state to state. I guess a good rule of thumb is don't carry any across state lines, because the laws
are different. Possession would be legal anywhere. So it's really should be viewed more as how we see wet and dry counties here in the U.S., where, you know, even if you live in a so-called dry county, that means that alcohol sales are not allowed, but you can still possess alcohol. You just don't see sales taking place. So basically what you would see are in some provinces, there will be regulated stores where people can purchase cannabis. There's also the ability to purchase it online.
Really?
But possession would be legal throughout the country. And that's also what we're seeing with states here in the U.S., where, for example, in Colorado or California, there might be a local government that opted out of allowing sales, but it is still legal for adults to possess marijuana in those places.
Right, but if I drive from Florida through Georgia, Florida, you know, obviously...
Well, now you're crossing state lines.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
Sure, but that's...
That you're getting into bad territory.
That's because the United States has not made marijuana legal at the federal level.
Right.
Canada has.
Gotcha. So that's what I was asking. So you don't want to take it across state lines in the U.S., because the law is different from state to state. And even within your state, I was reading something about in Florida, if you have, you know, they're not allowed to sell loose weed, you know, just like to roll a joint. There's no joints allowed. Only vaping. It's weird. You can buy oils or concentrates, but you can't buy the actual flower buds or anything like that. It doesn't make any sense, does it?
Well, we see this type of law in a number of states, and we also see states that begin with these types of more restrictive programs that slowly make them less restrictive. It's also something that we might see or could relate to certain types of alcohol sales, where, you know, we used to see some governments started, states began allowing beer sales and wine sales before they decided to allow liquor sales. Or there are still some states where you can purchase beer at a grocery store, but you would have to go to a liquor store or even a government-run store to purchase liquor.
Right.
We also see situations where some states don't allow certain types of products, like grain alcohol, for example, is legal in some states but not in others. And obviously, you know, this feels different because, you know, dry flower is the typical marijuana most people are familiar with.
Sure.
So it does seem awkward if that's not allowed and these other products are. But what we can expect are different states to be trying different approaches, and ultimately what's going to really matter is what the people want. Because if there's an overwhelming demand, sooner or later it is going to translate into what the policy will be in those places.
Gotcha. Mason Tvert of the Marijuana Policy Project. Before you go, tell the listeners what you do over at the Marijuana Policy Project. What is the goal of the organization? Sure.
The Marijuana Policy Project has been around since 1995. It's the largest organization in the country working to end marijuana prohibition exclusively. That's its mission. We work entirely on marijuana policy. We support ballot initiative efforts. We were one of the leaders of the Michigan initiative this go-round, and we were a major contributor in Utah as well. We also play a supporting role like we did in Missouri where that initiative passed. And then we also work in state legislatures. And so we've been building coalitions and lobbying and really advancing these laws, both at the ballot box as well as in legislatures. And then, of course, at the federal level in Congress. So at every level in the U.S., we are constantly working to roll back prohibition policies and replace them with more sensible ones that essentially treat marijuana like alcohol, or at least make it available for medical use.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your service on behalf of the
thank
listeners.
You very much.
And from the chat room, a plea from Proud Skell, who said, please work on the Deep South states. So I'll pass that along to you.
Absolutely.
All right. Mason Tvert of Marijuana Policy Project. Again, you can check them out at mpp.org. Thank you for the great news today. It's nice to go into the weekend hearing that at least on some fronts, we're becoming a little more progressive.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. So there's your weekend report. Marijuana won big. And by the way, he was mentioning Pete Sessions, who was the rules chair. And Pete Sessions, I guess, would block anything that came up. So replacing him as head of the rules committee will be Congressman Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, now that the Democrats are going to be in control. Jim McGovern says that he will permit federal lawmakers to debate and vote on marijuana-related amendments when he assumes control of the House Rules Committee. He said, unlike my predecessor, I'm not going to block amendments for marijuana. Citizens are passing ballot initiatives, legislatures are passing laws, and we need to respect that. Federal laws and statutes are way behind. So we'll take that as a good omen. All right. Quick time out. We'll come back on the other side with our pal Driftglass next. Don't go away. It's Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
Into the Mad Platters here on RadioNot.com as we take a walk through the Golden Grooveyard, kicking off a silver dollar twin spin with the Driftglass.
When this old world starts getting me
down. That's the Drifters. This is Driftglass.
Oh, sorry. Here's Driftglass with Nicole Sandler.
That still cracks me up. Driftglass is the man behind the Driftglass blog at driftglass.blogspot.com. He's also co-host, along with the amazing Blue Gal Fran, of the Professional Left podcast. You can find them at proleftpod.com. You can find Driftglass on Twitter at Mr._Electrico. Mr. Electrico, are you there?
I am here.
There
Thank you
are.
For that wonderful introduction.
Oh, but my pleasure. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Mr. Nicole Sandler and I were talking. You know, that's not right. His name is David, my husband. And I were talking. He's like, when are you going to have the view from the Midwest on the elections? You got to get Driftglass back on the show. And actually, I thought about that as well when I tuned on into Meet the Press last Sunday and saw David Brooks.
Well,
he always reminds me of you.
I make you think of David Brooks. I'm not sure how to take that exactly, but
in a demeaning kind of way.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I intended it.
Of course. So, how did you do in the elections? Florida, you know, it's Florida. I mean, we had a good year for Democrats in general, except Florida. Florida just really sucks.
Well, this morning I went to there's a local civic group. I belong to a lot of local civic groups here in Springfield, Illinois, just a few miles from where they buried Lincoln, mm-hmm. and a few miles from where we plan to bury the party of Lincoln this spring in a ceremony. There's a group that meets and talks about all kinds of things, one of which was what happened in this election this very year. And they had a bunch of local political reporters, some of whom I know. And the broad consensus is that the Republican Party is dead in Illinois.
Wow.
If there are still Republicans in Illinois, my local race between the nefarious and awful Rodney Davis and Betsy Dirksen-Lonergan, which I worked on and I knocked doors for and wrote things for and so forth, she lost, which is very sad. She lost by about 3,700 votes in this long, weird-looking district that was actually designed to make it easier for Democrats to win.
Wow.
But he was he worked for his predecessor for 16 years or so, and it's farm country. She won Springfield and Champaign. She won basically the urban areas, and he won the farm vote. But pretty much everywhere else, the Republican Party got crushed. The governor, our governor hedge fund, is now on his way out. Bruce Rauner will be leaving for Italy, if he hasn't already, to shake the dust of this dirty little town off his heels and get the hell out of the country and go spend his money in some other place.
Okay.
And we hired ourselves another billionaire, J.B. Pritzker, to be our next governor. So that's what that's about. And the that House, the Illinois House, now has a super duper majority.
Wow.
Mike Madigan has been running the House forever and ever and ever. Mike Madigan is wildly imperfect person to be leading the Democratic Party in Illinois, but he does. And had a majority, and everybody in the Republican Party, which was owned by Bruce Rauner. Bruce Rauner came in the door and just started buying people off. He started giving people – he bought the entire Republican Party out of cash. I mean, he literally did that. So everybody in the party was beholden to him, and everybody decided to be a good year to run as my candidate is Mike Madigan's crony, which didn't work at all, and they got crushed.
Good.
Champaign County is now 100% blue, which has never happened in my memory. We're probably going to lose one or two seats due to population loss, which is going to make things weirder and harder. But overall, the headline in the local paper a couple of days ago was basically, does the GOP have a future in Illinois?
Wow.
Which is, it's pretty amazing.
That's great news.
But not in the way, I mean, you have like this splinter, it's very much like national politics. If you want to sort of see what's happening 5 years from now, culturally, we're 30 years behind the time. But politically, we're 5 years ahead of the time. And so there's a splinter group of hard, hard right-wing conservatives who think the problem with the Republican Party is didn't go far enough right.
Oy.
And there's a former governor, Jim Edgar, who's like a 1970s, 80s, green eye shade, let's all get along, let's balance the books Republican, who said, no, we have to go to the center, we have to be more moderate. That's the fight they're having.
Well, and that's a fight Democrats have, too. I guess that's your standard political fight. You know, now that you win, do you move to the center, which is, you know, all of these, you Driftglass, you like to write about those, the never Trumpers, the Republicans who haven't embraced Trump. And all of a sudden, you know, they're the friends to the left. And you point out the hypocrisy there. They are the ones who are saying now the Democrat, even Jennifer Rubin, who I told you I actually like, she's got a column, I think it's today, it was today or yesterday, where she's like, now the Democrats need to move to the center. No! The ones who won were the ones who didn't play that stupid game.
Right? I mean, the media, Beltway media, broadly speaking, has one story it likes to tell. And it's a story. It's a narrative. It's a fiction. It's not real. It has nothing to do with reality. But it's that both sides are equally to blame. Both sides are terrible. The extremes on both sides are what's causing all the problems.
Right.
That story is a lie. But it's not one they can get rid of. Because there's no place for them to go after they lose that. Because if they lose that, then they lose their credibility going back 30 years because they've been in on it. If they lose that, then they have to take sides in politics, which they despise doing because that pisses off half the people they know. So they stick with the center, even though the center in this case is just a mathematical function. You know, if if Nicole, you and I are standing across the room from each other, the center is the middle of where we are.
Right.
It's just our distance divided by two. But if you go a million miles into crazy town, the center moves with you.
Yeah, it does. Right?
I'm just standing here. I haven't changed one iota. The Democratic Party hasn't really changed fundamentally in its platform in 40 years. We haven't changed. We've gotten more conservative, if anything.
Yeah.
But the Republican Party's gone so far into crazy town that they can't even be seen anymore. But since the narrative is always going to be the center, there's always going to be this desperate desire to return to the blaming the extremes on both sides. And that's what this election did.
Right.
Reporters and Beltway flunkies and all the rest of them were desperate for Democrats to have some little shred of power, so they could then get back to the narrative of lying about the center. And I asked one of our political reporters today in the elevator as we were going down. I said, you know, a lot of people talk about it. He sort of knows who I am.
Uh-huh.
I said, you know, I heard a lot of talk about the politics of anger and how people want to get over that. And if only we had like a hopeful, forward-looking, intelligent, articulate, thoughtful, brilliant leader
who
wanted to bring us all together and would give the Republicans everything they asked for. Would give them a way to reduce the budget and give them their own health care plan. If only we had that. That's what I hear you saying. That will save us from this terrible, torrent of anger that's afflicting everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said, didn't we have that for 8 years under Barack Obama?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
He laughed and said, yeah, we did. I said, and what happened exactly? They couldn't stand the fact that because they're a racist party. They couldn't stand the fact that a black, smart Democrat from Chicago was the president. They called him alien. They called him un-American. They called him everything but a child of God. And they sabotaged everything he tried to do. And then they elected the king of the birthers.
Right.
So please don't fucking tell me that the problem is the politics of anger. We tried an eight-year lab experiment of giving Republican, being civil and being nice and letting a hopeful, forward-looking leader, everything David Brooks ever wanted in a president.
Yeah,
and look what happened.
That's right.
So it doesn't fucking work.
And it didn't work for the Democrats either. You know, Obama wanted everyone to love him, so he wouldn't stand up and take a hard line on anything in terms of in political terms. And I see Trump every fucking day. You know, those despicable Democrats or whatever. You know, the names he calls us on the left. Yeah, it's just. It went from one extreme to the other.
Yes, it did, and it's that kind of thing. And it was the what I got was, oh, you're bringing up the past. that's right. You liberals do that sort of shit, don't you? You bring up the thing that actually happened that we should all compare today to. Memory is our superpower, right, Nicole? I mean, remembering the past is sort of our secret weapon. Because in the middle of these stupid conversations that apparently have no context, especially with never Trumpers, you know, we bring up, well, where the hell were you 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago? That, and believe me, if you want to lose friends fast on the sort of establishment left, the ones who think these are your best, just start talking that way.
Yeah.
start shit into the conversation. You know, Rick Wilson, who is my sort of poster boy for this sort of thing now, who not only blocks me on Twitter now.
I saw that.
I'm handing out blocking awards for you block.
I was going to ask you about that because I love this. On the Driftglass blog, you have the blocker awards.
I do.
So tell us about the blocker awards because I'm very impressed. You got a whole production going on here.
Well, I needed some way to talk about the way we talk to each other. Especially using social media, especially using Twitter, while acknowledging the fact that Twitter is a sewer.
Yes.
You know, it's useful and functional, but you don't want to drink out of it, you know? So it the context of things, I block people every day. It's like weeding the garden.
Of course.
It's just, the world's full of trolls. I don't have time for them, so I tell them to go away. But there's context for things that are fascinating. So when Rick Wilson was sitting on the Joe Scarborough set. That Joe Scarborough finally said, you know what, Brick, you know, here's the thing. Liberals were right about us. I thought they weren't. I thought 55 years and 55 years old. But it turns out those liberals were right about us all along. 10 minutes later, Rick Wilson blocks me on Twitter.
Why? What did you do?
Because I've spent the last year pointing out to him that the left has been right about the right all along. Ah. That your book is predicated on the assumption that all this started 3 fucking years ago. And mm-hmm. you know it's not true. And you know it's not true because you were part of the party. You know, to believe your alibi, you'd have to believe that the only people who didn't know what was going on inside the Republican Party was the leadership of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
That all the idea that the Republican Party is full of Republicans is a shock to Rick Wilson, who's a Republican Party ad man and hitman, and Steve Schmidt, who ran Republican campaigns, and Joe Scarborough, who's Republican.
I'm sorry, Steve Schmidt, who gave us Sarah Palin.
Exactly. And now they would all like to, you know, raise their right hand and swear to God that this is, they had no idea the Republican Party was this way. And I'm saying, well, we were telling you this the entire time, and you called us liars and stupid and crazy and mm-hmm. traitors. So that's very inconvenient. But what made Rick so special was that shortly after blocking me on Twitter, he opined about some other person blocking some other person as that person's a little wisp of a man.
Ooh.
You know, people who block people who disagree with Twitter are just pussies. And I just thought that, you know, this and Rick Wilson would be sitting under an overpass selling oranges were it not for the fact that he has friends on MSNBC, that he has friends at the Pod Save America podcast, that he has people on liberal television who will promote his book.
Right.
And he's a good writer. I'm not going to...
Good writer. And, well, I haven't read the book, but he's funny. Yeah. He's actually kind of a likable guy.
He is.
Yeah.
If it weren't for the fact that he's doing my shtick from 20 years ago, I could forgive him of that.
Right.
But all they are doing, and I wouldn't mind this. I swear to God, I wouldn't mind this. It's they are ripping off the liberal critique of the Republican Party for the last 30 years from liberals. Okay, great. We were right. You were wrong. Let's acknowledge that and move on. But we can't do that. Because if we start acknowledging that liberals were right about Iraq and the economy and the Republican Party and us scumbags who made the Republican Party what it is today, then we have to then go away. You know, we have to then stop being media people who get credit for being right, because clearly we weren't right ever about anything. And that's, again, not a conversation that anyone in that universe wants to have, because mm-hmm. once you start pulling on that thread, like, well, you've been wrong about everything your entire adult life. You've taken really vicious positions on the people who were right all along. So why the fuck are you still in a chair there in front of a camera? Why isn't Nicole in that chair? Why isn't Digby in that chair?
Yeah.
Why not some liberal somewhere who wasn't completely fucking wrong about everything since the beginning of time instead of you? And the answer is, well, then we'd have a lot of explaining to do. So we're not going to have that conversation. So my great fear is, and you're seeing it happen right before our eyes, is that the new normal in terms of political debate will be Rick Wilson and Bill Kristol on one side, uh-huh. Eric Bolling and Eric Erickson on the other.
God,
and
help us.
That's going to be the spectrum of political debate. God. And liberals will simply disappear. We'll still be here. And we'll still be winning elections. And we'll still be right about everything. And we'll still be 10 years ahead of everybody else. But this is absolutely radioactive to political discourse at this point. Nobody wants to acknowledge liberals exist, or that we were right about the right all along.
Right. Well, that goes to, I mean, just look at the state of talk radio in this country. I mean, we've been over this a million times, but Air America, for all the problems it had, at least was an outlet for liberals and progressives to have a network. And yes, it was run horribly, and there were all kinds of problems there. But that went away, and it seems like all liberal voices disappeared from the airwaves. You can drive from one side of this country to the other and never lose Rush Limbaugh, but you can also drive from one side of the country to the other and never find a progressive voice on your radio.
Yeah, and that's where the whole argument of everyone needs to be included in this conversation. When I get, you know, start getting that sort of Herbert Lom, the guy from the Pink Panther, you know, the inspector who's his boss, started getting that twitch and started getting harder and harder. When I start getting my Herbert Lom twitch on over MSNBC putting Corey Lewandowski on television three times in 2 days.
Oh, my God.
Or putting Hugh Hewitt on for no explicable reason.
Well, at least they canceled his show.
They did. Well, but he's still on.
Yeah, they still have him on.
Because he's an asset. They bought him. Oh, God. So, you know, they still have to sort of they have to amortize the cost of buying this idiot over the course of whatever amount of years. So they roll him out every now and then to say something stupid, or setting fire to a big pile of money to hire Megyn Kelly.
Oh my God.
This is what they do. So when I get furious about that, the counter argument is, well, I want to hear from all sides. We want to hear from every voice. Let every voice sing. First of all, no. People who right. are wrong about everything shouldn't be in front of a microphone. There's a million other things they could do. They could lay bricks and they could sell cars. Mm-hmm. And there's carpeting needs to be laid in this country, Nicole. And those people can all go do that. But paying people who've never been right about a goddamn thing in their life to opine about politics is clearly there's something else going on here. And secondly, you can drive from one coast to the next and hear them all day long. Yeah. I can't not hear them.
Yeah.
They're in every garage here. They're the default setting on, ugh, you know, every television in every lobby I go into. They're in my goddamn local paper. They're on my radio. I have no trouble hearing what Republicans think, mm-hmm, which is what makes me a better spokesman for what's happening in the Republican Party than David goddamn Brooks, who still thinks, who still believes. And this is – I'll stop doing this,
yeah,
I swear.
Keep going.
These days.
Yeah.
But a column today is – oh, conservatism is just falling apart. It's just so tragic. And the Republican Party's at its end. And it's been going on for a very, very long time. And, oh, it's just very sad. It's all very sad. It's all done in the passive voice. It had nothing to do with him. This, you know, he just floats above it and observes it. It had nothing to do with him. This is the same guy who said 4 years ago that the Republican Party is now just fine. Everything's fine in the Republican Party. We've turned a corner. Everything's great. We used to be scary back when Sarah Palin was, you know, on the scene, but we're not scary anymore. We're very normal, and we just won a big election. So, you know, the Republican Party has turned the corner and had a renaissance. Both of these things cannot be true. It cannot be true that in 2014, everything was fine in the Republican Party. And in 2018, the Republican Party and conservatism has been broken for 50 years.
Right.
Two things cannot exist in the same universe. But David Brooks has written both of those things.
Right.
And there is no one in the media who will simply hold up those two pieces of writing and say, which of these is a lie, David? Which of these is a lie? And because the minute they do, they're going to get a call from their boss saying, thank you for your service. Your seat at the table has now been filled by Bret Stephens. You're telling a story we don't want to hear.
Yep.
We want to hear a fairy tale about a happy land where there are moderates in the middle who are really the people you want to sort of sweep in towards, and the extremes on both sides are the problem. And that's the fairy tale David Brooks sells. And it's one that's going to keep selling until there stops being a market for it.
Right. And I keep waiting for, you know, to see who the liberal voices are going to be who come up. And there just aren't any. It seems like, for instance, MSNBC, which is by no means the liberals' answer to Fox. I think they used to try to do that, but they gave up that charade a long time ago. And now they want to be the party, the outlet for the people who are no longer with the Republican Party.
Right.
But we don't want to go full on Democrat yet either. We don't want to, you know, go full on liberals. We'll just have people like Rick Wilson and Bret Stephens and Jennifer Rubin and Nicole Wallace, people
Steve
who
Schmidt and
Steve Schmidt, whole, exactly. Yeah. There's tons of them.
There's a John Podhoretz.
Yes,
and there's
there is
some guy, Noah Rothman from Comedy.
Oh yes,
there's just and my favorite thing is flipping. Not favorite. That's a horrible thing to do to that word. It's not my favorite thing. Flipping back and forth between Fox and NBC and seeing Bill Kristol's idiot son-in-law on both of those platforms.
Who's Bill Kristol's son-in-law?
Matthew Continetti.
Say
Matthew
again?
Matthew Continetti of the Washington Examiner.
Oh.
Matthew Continetti, who has a reserved seat at Meet the Press, who has a reserved seat at MSNBC and NBC, who has a reserved seat at CNN, who has a reserved seat at Fox. I've seen him on Fox before. And his whole existence, the reason he exists at all, is because he married Bill Kristol's daughter.
Wow.
The only reason he exists. And they gave him a sack of money and said, go start your own shitty magazine. We have the Weekly Standard. He did the Washington Beacon.
Uh-huh.
Which is a shitty, awful, terrible magazine.
Right. But look at Bill Kristol. Bill Kristol's another one of those former, I mean, I don't know if he still calls himself a Republican, but he's trying to act like, oh, I'm with you guys over here on the left. When it's bullshit.
But and why does Bill Kristol exist? Because he's Irvin Kristol's son. That's the only reason. The only reason Bill Kristol has a fucking job is that he's the son of Irvin Kristol, and that one day Rupert Murdoch was in this country and had a big and was buying up shit and gave Bill Kristol and David Brooks, they worked together, a big pile of money and said start a conservative, you know, a prestige conservative magazine. And they created the Weekly Standard.
So don't you think that Tom Steyer should take some of those billions of his dollars and support progressive media?
No, Nicole, I prefer fighting the trenches over nickels. Yeah, of course,
it pisses me off. He's running all these commercials to impeach Trump, which is never going to happen. He's spending a fortune on this vanity project to build up his email list, which is what that's all about. Instead of, you know, supporting progressive media, he could fund a whole network.
Absolutely.
Oh my God!
And the infrastructure is already in place. The people, the audience is already there. Yep. The people who know how to sit in front of a microphone. Believe me, I can sit in front of a microphone on air and not swear for hours at a time.
So can I. We do that. Because we can. But we can make it through a show without saying fuck.
I make it through church every Sunday, almost never saying fuck. Almost never.
I hear you.
Every now and then, you know, slips out a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, there's plenty of people out there who can sit in front of a camera and talk, or sit in front of a microphone and talk. There's, again, a built-in audience for it.
Yes, there is.
Watching what happened in Georgia with Stacey Abrams. Yep. Watching what happens in Texas. I mean, there is
a watching what's massive, happening in Florida. Hello?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, if you take a giant step back from this sort of the day-to-day election, I mean, like I said, I walked precincts and I knocked on doors I've never knocked on before. I met lots of fascinating people, but we lost. But the fact that Stacey Abrams is within, you know, 20 votes, he said, exaggerating, of being the governor of Georgia.
It's a big deal.
A black woman is that. They have to cheat and cheat and cheat to keep her out of the job of governor of Georgia. That's a miracle.
It really is.
That's a wonderful thing. That is so hopeful. And she brought all these people along with her. Beto O'Rourke brought all these people along with her.
Beto O'Rourke is a hero. He's a rock star. And, you know, for all the people saying he needs to run in 2020, stop it. No, he needs to run for Senate again up against Cornyn in 2020 because he can beat Cornyn and be the senator from Texas. Let him serve a couple of terms and then run for president. He's young enough.
And study.
Yes.
I mean, he ran a nearly perfect campaign.
He really did.
In my little district here, Betsy ran a nearly perfect campaign and lost.
Hmm.
And it should tell you something about the nature of the electoral the body politic, when you can run a nearly perfect campaign against a horrible human being and lose. And there was no way that you know, in my case, she was going to win because structurally it's impossible to beat someone like this with a voting population like that. But learn from that. Understand who it is you're going up against. Quit trying to run campaigns that bring people to the middle and appeal to that broad, heartfelt center who just want people to get along. Fuck that. That is not what people respond to.
Exactly.
They respond to principled people standing up and saying, I believe this and this and this. My opponent doesn't. And that's your choice.
Right.
And I believe the people who are on the opposite side of this debate are awful. I believe they believe terrible things. I believe that I don't know why they believe what they believe, but they're wrong. They're wrong. And we need to be afraid. Stop being afraid of calling them liars and calling them wrong.
I want someone at one of these press conferences to ask Trump why he fucking lies all the time. Just ask him point blank. Why can't you tell the truth about X, Y, and Z? Why do you lie to us?
I would love to do that.
Oh, it would be.
Oh, seriously, no, I would pay real American money for one reporter to stand up. I got a question. Why the fuck do you lie all the time?
Yes. And they can even do it without saying fuck. Just ask him, honestly, why do you keep lying? You lie to the American people on a regular basis. Why do you do that? And see him dance.
I would also suggest that, and I've made this before to Jay Rosen, who's a media guy, I'm sure you know him.
NYU, yeah.
That we just swap out the White House press corps with combat correspondents. people who have no problem going into combat, people who have no problem under fire, have them go in, show up in the press room in full camo and ask questions as one would ask of a foreign tyrant.
Yeah.
Well, and just see what happens for a week.
Yeah.
You know, just see what happens. It's not going to overthrow the government. They're not going to change. That's Mueller, that's the Democratic Congress, that's the investigative process. Those things are already in motion. The balls are already in the air. That's going to happen, whatever is going to happen. But Democrats, and frankly the media, need the media especially need to save itself. I don't think people who work in the Washington press corps realize how much, in what low regard they are held, or why. I think there's this common belief that, well, if both sides hate me, I must be doing my job.
Yeah.
That's a mantra.
That's worn out.
No, I don't think they truly understand that when we see you giving hand jobs to monsters because of access and sauces. You know, mm-hmm. I learned today, Jimmy, that Susie has a little mole right there. And it's and dumbass stories like that that are completely irrelevant to the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. They really understand, because they don't really leave that bubble, how irrelevant to our lives they have become. They've made themselves.
Yeah.
And make career suicide, to tell the truth. Okay, fine. After you commit career suicide, you can write a book. And then Tom Steyer's can, you know, build you a liberal radio station.
I guess.
But this election, I'm breathing again.
Yeah. Well, we stopped the hemorrhaging, and we began to turn the tide, and hopefully we'll survive. Driftglass is what he goes by. You can find him at driftglass.blogspot.com and proleftpod.com. Thank you, Driftglass.
My pleasure.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.
Bye.